Today is June 29th, 2016, and this is episode number 366 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm tired, sleepy even. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/HTM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I'm sure you are tired and sleepy. I feel your pain.
Yeah, you know, we're both not good. What do you call that thing?
We're sleep underachievers.
So, oh, right. We're both not good at getting sleep. That's right. The thing. Right.
Yeah.
It's true.
So, nap time. That's this week's Apple Context Machine.
It'd be really cool if we could get Paying Gigs podcasting while napping.
This is brilliant. All right, let's do a Kickstarter. You know, I was also thinking we could start a nap podcast so that people can act as if they're listening to a show, and we'll give it some name where it sounds like it's some important, life fulfillment type show.
Sure.
And then we do the introduction, which only takes a few seconds, and then it's just silence for an hour. And then we have this gentle outro to wake people up so they can get back to work.
Huh.
And that, but we'll also provide one fact about something. So when someone says, "What is the show about?" everyone can say the one thing.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Genius.
This is going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. This can't possibly fail.
No. I can't see failure at all in this.
No. Not even... like, no chance whatsoever.
No, this is going to be brilliant.
The failure for this thing you've got for us to do.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. The scripts will be really easy.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and topics will be really easy because all we need is a buzz phrase from the week.
Yeah.
We're set.
Yeah, so something like... something like that.
Wait, hold on. I'm taking notes because that was a really good one.
All right. We're just off to a bad start.
No, I think we're off to a brilliant start because this is a great show idea. Oh, fine. Whatever. Well, then do you have anything better to talk about?
A couple things. How about China? How about, you know, we haven't talked about China in, you know, days, it seems.
So it seems. All right. Well, let's talk about China. And you actually did a really good analysis piece about what's going on in China.
So China has handed down some new regulations. And my reading of those regulations is, it's pretty cut and dry. So China is requiring App Store providers, and there's
which would include Apple,
which would include Apple. There are, I think, I don't know, a dozen different platforms or something like that in China for
app sales,
app stores. I'm sleepy. And
it's okay. We're going to get through this together, Brian. We may have to complete each other's sentences, but we're going to do it.
We're going to try at least. So they're requiring App Store providers to verify the identities of both users and developers. So, you know, no getting, you know, like a prepaid credit card.
Right. So I can't buy stuff through the App Store as Buyer McBuyerson.
Correct. You would not be able to do that. You have to verify the App Store providers have to verify the identities of both users and developers and keep a record of all user activity for 60 days. And then they also, this is the part that really freaks me out, they have to monitor and report, and I'm going to quote Bloomberg here, They have to monitor and report, quote, postings that contain banned content to Chinese authorities. Actually, postings that contain banned content, unquote, to Chinese authorities.
Okay, so my interpretation of that is that the Chinese government is mandating that App Store systems and developers must act as a surveillance arm for the government and actively monitor what app users are doing.
Yes.
And report back on that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it seems like to me too. And that's a problem for me.
That's a problem for me too.
And it's going to be a problem for Apple as well. I mean, you know, it's so you look at, you know, China is, I hate the Chinese government so freaking much, man. They obsess over controlling what their people can know. And I hate that. I hate that. I hate that so much. And that's what this is about. So there's first of all, the number of like app store transactions and the number of things being said on apps and the number of apps being made, all these things are exploding. And mm-hmm. along with it is an increase in criticism of the government, and Chinese government hates, the Chinese party hates that. So that's what's the impetus behind these regulations is trying to get a handle on that, because sales of mobile devices are exploding in China. The growth of these platforms is absolutely tremendous, and you know, China's basically just trying to get a lockdown on that information while they can. I think it's probably a fool's errand, but that's one reason why they're actually charging the app store providers with doing some of the work here. They're offloading some of their censorship tasks to providers. And how does a Western company, how does a company that's theoretically committed to such things as privacy and freedom of expression, how does such a company continue to do business in China?
That's a really good question. I mean, yeah, how would they, from a moral standpoint, continue to operate? The other side of it is, how many companies are really going to be able to afford to build the infrastructure they need to monitor content to the level that the Chinese government is demanding?
Oh, that's a huge question, you know, all on its own. I mean, how in the heck is the Chinese government, let alone any individual corporation, supposed to actually control all this? And the reality is it probably can't be controlled. Like I said, it's a fool's errand.
Sure.
You know, it's just, you know, the Chinese, the Communist Party lives in the state of denial about a lot of things, and controlling this kind of information is certainly one of them. So look at search engines. You know, China has strict censorship regulations on what search engines, what kind of information search engines can show and link to. For instance, you know, you're not allowed to actually look up anything about Tiananmen Square, at least not about the student uprising that was centered there. China has been squelching that information internally for decades. Since it happened, really. And that's just one of the many things that China censors. And when Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft were all faced with imposing those censorship rules on search results in China, the three companies acted differently. Facebook and Yahoo both basically said, well, hey, yo, not our problem. You know, we're just following local laws and we're going to do business in China because we've been here for a long time. Google pulled out of China. We brought that up many times.
Mm-hmm.
But Google pulled out of China, stopped censoring. They did censor it first, and then they stopped it once they put some thought into it and started redirecting efforts to pull up the Chinese version of Google to the Hong Kong version of Google, where currently, at least, those same censorship laws aren't in place.
Right. And I do wonder if Google was capitulating in the beginning, not because they had to reevaluate what they were doing, but because they were trying to continue to offer a service while they got everything transitioned so that they could move out to Beijing.
Hong Kong?
Hong Kong.
Yeah, you know, that may be it. The reality is that, you know, you have to follow the law or pull out or go out of business. Mm-hmm. Or go to prison.
Which is kind of like going out of business.
It's kind of like going out of business. You know, some Google executive, Google employees, some of whom are Chinese citizens and some of whom were, you know, probably foreign nationals, would have gone to jail if Google didn't impose the censorship. But the company turned around and did the right thing and they pulled up stakes rather than continuing to do that. And that is absolutely huge. There were Google shareholders who were pissed because, you know, a lot of capitalists don't care about such things as principles. And mm-hmm. pulling out of the world's largest market is saying no to a lot of money. And as it is, Baidu, which is Google's biggest competitor anywhere in the world, but is the dominant search engine in China. Baidu has been able to get this foothold and cement its lead and is using its position in China to actually leverage itself into foreign markets, i.e. the West. So, I mean, you know,
which is interesting.
Yeah, Google paid a significant. My point is, Google paid a significant price. This was not a casual thing just pulling out of China. It wasn't a casual thing at all. And this hasn't really affected Apple all that much.
No. Well, really. Right now, what Apple's dealing with is the iBook store and is it movies?
Yeah, movie store.
The movie store? Yeah. Those have been shut down in China.
Right. And they were only open for 6 months, and they were shut down, I think, in January. Is that right?
Oh, that sounds about right.
So those got shut down. And you know, at some point, Apple would have been forced to make the same choice, right? With those, with the iBook store and with the movie store, at some point, Apple would have had to decide whether or not to censor banned content or pull up stakes. And China sort of beat them to the punch by kicking them out.
Right. And but, you know, Apple is still talking positively and saying, hey, we've got a good relationship with China. And although this new law or new regulation has me wondering, how long will Apple be able to keep a good relationship with China?
Well, and what will it mean for Apple's ecosystem? I mean, the question is, will Apple kowtow? Put another way, will Apple obey local regulations and censor and report to the government people who violate censorship laws, right? Becoming an informer to the government, becoming part of China's censorship arm and surveillance arm. Is Apple going to become a part of that, or is Apple going to shut the App Store down? And if it shuts the App Store down, what does that do to the iPhone and iPad and even the Mac in the Chinese market?
That's a big problem because the app stores are essential parts of the entire Apple ecosystem. It's not like you can go pick up iPhone apps anywhere else.
They're just not sanctioned, and you have to be jailbroken.
Right, and that's not a market that Apple wants to promote.
I mean, no, by no means. And as a matter of fact, the interesting thing here is that I think that these regulations in general are going to push more Chinese citizens into using alternative app delivery messages, not only on iPhone, but on Android and Windows and Linux and, you know, whatever other garbage devices they have over there. Sorry, I'm referring to Android devices being garbage.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not saying that everything in China is garbage. That's completely not what I meant. Did I mention I'm sleepy?
No, hadn't picked up on that.
Okay, all right, good. So what the heck is Apple going to do here? I mean, you know, what is Apple's play? Does Apple shut down the Apple App Store, or does it become part of China's surveillance and censorship machine?
I can't see Apple being comfortable capitulating.
I don't either, but Apple has invested, I don't know, probably certainly tens of billions of dollars, probably hundreds of million dollars building, you know, the handful of Apple stores that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And in trying to build its brand and presence in China, because it sees China as one of its hands down its easiest and largest opportunity for continued growth for existing product lines. And and shutting down the App Store is going to put a huge crimp in that.
Yeah, that's a problem. I could see Apple shareholders being pretty upset about that. I mean, you don't want to cut off your biggest potential market.
No, you don't want to cut off your biggest. I mean, and they could still sell devices without having an App Store in China, but it just throws the entire concept of the Apple ecosystem out the window.
Sure.
It's an incredibly difficult position for Apple, or, you know, really any company, but you know, especially Apple, a company that makes a lot of money and has made principled stands in public on a number of issues, including equality, the environment,
mm-hmm.
privacy, and the freedom of expression too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I hate the Chinese Communist Party. Hate them. This is, China wins either way. Either they turn Apple into a part of their control machine, or Apple shuts down and has less of a presence in the Chinese market, and the Chinese government would be happy either way, because the Communist Party does not want foreign technology companies to control the Chinese technology market.
True. Still, I wonder what kind of impact this would have on China's economy, because this is where iPhones get made.
China don't care.
I know, but still.
Yeah, that apparently has had little weight with China, or China would not have done some of the many things that China has already done. You know, China has regularly made Apple a pawn in U.S.-Chinese political tensions.
Mm-hmm.
China has harassed Apple in the media. So the Chinese government has harassed Apple through state-owned media.
Yep, that's true.
Has accused Apple of doing things that it didn't do. Has shut down the iTunes store, the iTunes movie store, and the iBook store, and done all the. I mean, you know, clearly Apple does. I mean, China doesn't care about the, you know, million or so people who are involved in making iPhones in China.
Well, I guess if you're in a position of power and you can afford to lose business like that, you're, at least from your own perspective, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah. Well, they're more concerned with control than with economic fallout, or at the very least, they're willing to eat the price of that economic fallout to maintain that control. You know, and it's so ridiculous. In an increasingly connected world, people are going to find out about the massacre of students in Tiananmen Square.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like people in China aren't aware of the Great Firewall, because they do things to work around it already. Some.
A very small, tiny percentage of the population.
Nonetheless, if you have a percentage of the population that is dissenting like that, it's something that can grow.
Yeah, you just can't. You can't real time monitor 1.5 billion people unless you're going to stick a 1.5 billion people on it.
Yeah, but then who's going to monitor them?
The other 1.5 billion people.
I don't know. Oh, problem solved.
China's population is below 1.5 billion, but I mean, I don't know. It's a mess. I do not envy Tim Cook his job in navigating these waters.
No, this is a very difficult place to be. This is also a place where I feel more comfortable with Tim Cook at the helm than Steve Jobs. I just have more faith that Tim will be able to resolve this in a positive way.
Okay. Well, I mean, Steve would have had Tim on it if Steve were still with us. This.
All right, that's a good point. So either way, this would have been Tim's baby.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, no wonder I feel so much more comfortable with Tim addressing the issue, because he was going to have to do it regardless.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation.
It is. And I'm really curious to see what Apple and other companies do. Because Apple isn't the only company that has an app store.
No, Google Play does not exist in China, for what that's worth. You know, again, kudos to Google.
Right, but there are other companies that have Android app stores.
Yeah, most of them are Chinese companies at this point, but still, it's an interesting situation. It's a conundrum for any Western company, and I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah, this one's going to be interesting to watch.
Yep,
we should get our popcorn.
Yeah. Speaking of Google.
Yeah. So Google, they are pulling a page from Apple's playbook, and they have decided that they're going to do their own phone process from beginning to end in-house. So they're, you know, we already have the Nexus phone, which is a Google phone. HTC makes it. Google now is working on something that I think ultimately will compete with that. So it'll be Google designed hardware, and it will be running Google designed apps and of course Android. And then it'll tie directly into Google's own app store. And if all of this sounds really familiar, it's because that's how the iPhone works. And so Google is planning on getting all this wrapped up so that they can launch I'm going to call it their walled garden phone before the end of the year.
So let me get this straight. Google buys Motorola.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make its own hardware. Doesn't right. make a Google phone.
Right.
It owned Motorola. Mm-hmm. At that time, one of the top Android mobile phone developers on the planet.
Yep.
Sells Motorola to the Chinese.
At a loss.
And mm-hmm. now they want to make their own hardware.
Yes. And also, just to put a little icing on the cake for you, Brian,
mm-hmm.
the guy that was running Motorola, when Google sold it off, they hired him back.
Shut the front door.
No way, man.
Are you seriously?
Mm-hmm.
So they buy Motorola. They don't make their own smartphone, which, by the way, I was begging them to do at the time.
Well, they listened.
I wrote several editorials saying that first of all, it's like, oh, it looks like Motorola's going to do the whole widget thing. That's wonderful news. and then saying, yeah, boy, I hope Google does the whole widget thing with that Motorola purchase. And then turning into, man, you know, Google really should do the whole widget thing. It doesn't look. Oh, my God. Why doesn't Google do the whole widget thing? Years of this. Mm-hmm. They sell the company at a loss. And then they hire the CEO or the president?
President, I believe.
To hire the former president of Motorola and bring him on board to oversee hardware development for a Google branded whole widget device.
Right. And he's also in charge of everything that goes along with the Nexus program. So, you know, so everything that he should have been handling when Motorola was part of Google, that's what he's doing now.
That's excellent.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That is, I mean, I'm glad they're finally doing it. I'm glad to find, I'd love to see the Nexus phones, in my opinion, have been the best Android devices.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In part because the hardware has been pretty good, but mostly because it was running naked Android. You know, what didn't have Samsung's layers of crap on it, didn't have HTC's interface on it. It was running naked Android.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I double checked. Rick Osterlaw was Motorola president, not CEO.
Got it. But Nexus still isn't as good as a whole widget, in my opinion. Right. There's a lot of things that I believe the whole widget is better for when it comes to product design. And one of those things, of course, being this, you know, getting updates out there, which is the bane of the Android world. I wonder if Google doing this just as a, you know, another strand of spaghetti to throw at the wall, or does Google actually plan to become the premier Android provider?
That's a really good question. And my guess is they're hoping that they become a premier manufacturer, but it may be the spaghetti approach to get there. Part of the issue that Google is addressing is their frustration with platform fragmentation. And by the way, I do see the irony in here, where they have their own branded phone program, and now they're going to make another branded phone program, essentially fragmenting their branded phone program. So yeah. I'm not sure how that addresses fragmentation in the Android market, but there you go.
Yeah. It's really weird.
It is weird. And I'm at a loss to figure out why they didn't do this when they owned Motorola.
Yeah, it is hard to. Well, I mean, Occam's Razor says it's because they changed their mind and realized that they should have done it.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's the why. It's just, I mean, it just seemed like such an obvious play when they first bought Motorola.
I know. So how could they have missed it? And that leads me to Chaffin's Razor, which is, is it Chaffin's Razor?
Yep.
Okay, Chaffin's Razor, which says if something seems irrational or crazy, from our perspective, there is a key element that we're not aware of.
Missing information.
So there's some missing piece of information with the whole Google phone that we don't have, because it doesn't make sense that they didn't do this when they owned Motorola.
No, it sure doesn't. You know, I'll be interested to see what comes out of it. I'm glad, you know, something will actually still has to ship. So, I mean, this is a report. Google hasn't announced it or anything.
Right. And the report says Google plans to ship before the end of the year. So my assumption is that means in time for the holiday buying season.
Yeah, sure. That would make sense. I look forward to seeing it. Like I said, I'm a big fan of the whole widget model, And it's not because Apple does it. It's more like I'm, you know, one of the reasons why I'm a fan of Apple is they follow the whole widget model. You can do a lot of exciting stuff when you control the software and the hardware.
Yes. When your product stops being a committee, then things become a lot clearer and you have the potential to end up with a much better product.
Yeah. The potential at the least.
Yes. And yeah.
Well, all right.
So what else do you want to talk about?
Angry Birds.
Okay. Tell me, Brian, what is it about Angry Birds that has you excited or upset?
It's Angry Birds 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually going to come back to Apple. And, well, not really. It's actually going to come back to Amazon. It's, you know, it's ads. It's the in-app purchase model for games, you know, free to download.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Angry Birds 2 is a great game. And it's a great game that has just jumped a shark.
Okay.
If I end up writing an editorial, it's actually going to be my headline. It's going to be Angry Birds 2, a great game that has jumped a shark.
Do we need to explain jumping the shark? Or do you think our audience gets that?
I Google it.
Yes, Google jump the shark.
Jump the shark. Hey.
Yeah, and the footage you'll see with that, I find to be quite disturbing.
That is funny.
Yeah, also true.
And Angry Birds 2, you know, like they've done this, you know, the physics are amazing. You know, they've got all these cool aspects. They do a lot of things wrong. One of them is that they've turned the game from one where your struggle is to get the highest score possible, to get 3 stars,
mm-hmm.
and or the highest score possible, mm-hmm. to a game where the struggle is to actually just get through each level, to complete it.
That could be okay, but based on the way Angry Birds has been played previously, that sounds like it would be more frustrating.
Well, it is. It's frustrating to me. I loved in Angry Birds all the, you know, the Angry Birds Seasons is the game I probably played the most, followed by Angry Birds Star Wars.
Yeah, Angry Birds Star Wars. I also did a lot of Angry Birds. Was it Space?
Yeah, I played some Space too. That was fun. I stopped playing Space because of Star Wars, because Star Wars was so awesome.
Well, Star Wars builds on Space, so you have the same physics, but also lightsabers.
Right. Lightsabers and the Force and a bunch of other cool stuff.
Yeah.
And this game, you know, this game's sort of, all the birds have special features, just like in Star Wars, in Angry Birds Star Wars. And that's cool. That's fun. But each level is, you know, I think 3 to 6 screens.
Okay.
And so,
as opposed to you play a level by winning on the one screen, then you go to the next level.
Correct. Right. To get through the level, you have to actually do multiple screens. And that ends up meaning that you're wasting effort. Let me rephrase that. If one screen can obviate and negate, not obviate, one screen can negate all the work you've done in previous screens, and that to me is unfun. And by the way, I've been playing the crap out of this game, despite my complaints about it.
But here's science, of course.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I think that one of the reasons why they did this. It's because the Angry Birds 2 is free to download.
Okay.
And within the game, you are presented with opportunities to watch ads for extra birds, extra rewards, and extra lives. So they artificially limit the number of lives you have.
Okay.
To 5. Well, there's a $9.99 purchase. It'll bump that up to 6. I did that purchase. And it's just completely artificial. And the only way to get more lives is either through waiting through time. It's, I think it's 30 minutes to regenerate a life, or to spend gems to replenish all your lives. And to get the gems, you either collect them in game slowly or you pay real money for them.
See, what you're describing to me does not sound like Angry Birds at all.
It's not. It's an advertising engine. And an engine that is built around making you, presenting you with reasons to make in-app purchases. And I don't like that. I don't like that. And then there's the arenas, which is this really cool idea where they pit players against each other.
Okay.
Same birds, although it doesn't seem like the birds are always in the same order for both players, which is weird. But same maps. And it's one player going up against another player. But here's the deal. It turns out that your opponent is a previously played game, not a live opponent. So you're playing the results of someone else that has already played that map.
That's weird.
Well, here's why they do it. They do it for a number of reasons. One, you don't get into a game where someone just sits there waiting for the other person to finish so that they know what they have to beat.
Okay.
Okay. For another, it allows Rovio to control the amount of information you get to manipulate your gameplay. I hate that. I hate being manipulated. I hate being manipulated. For another, it allows them. Here's the really insidious thing about Angry Birds 2 Arenas. I don't think that this thing where you're playing the results from a game that's already been played. So in other words, player A plays player B, but player B's score and game was actually played against player C. And player C's results were actually played against player D.
Okay. This new math hurts my head.
It's difficult. But they're not pitting you against random opponents. What I think that they're doing, and this part I don't know for sure. The other stuff is all fact. This is conjecture on my part. I think that they're actually pitting you based on your average score. So they're picking an opponent with an average score that is just high enough to cause you to likely need to watch an ad to beat them, or to have to spend gems to continue the game to beat them. And I noticed, I figured that out because my opponents routinely there's another kind of fun thing for that only has a practical effect in the arenas, where your birds can go up higher in level. They don't do more damage the higher the level they are, but they score higher. So there's a point multiplier based on the bird level.
Okay, so what you're describing to me is a system where people are having to watch the ads and pay into the system to be able to win. And once that started, the next person who is now going to be pitted against your score, they have to do at least as much to be able to beat your score, which means more ads and more in-app purchases.
Well, they're going to match my results up against another good player. An inexperienced player is probably not going to ever be pitted against my results.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty good at Angry Birds. And the people that I'm being pitted against routinely have 10 to 12 bird levels more than me. That's not random.
No, if it's consistently that way, sure, that's not random.
That's not random. It's because Rovio is picking my opponents based on, I really think it's because they're picking them, my opponents, based on their average score being high enough to require me to watch an ad to beat them or to pay gyms to beat them. And that is it's disgusting is what it is. I was thinking about earlier today. It's possible I was playing Angry Birds 2 while I was waiting for the coffee machine to heat up, maybe.
It could happen, sure.
It could happen, right. And I was thinking about it, is that Rovio has taken a game that I used to be able to spend, you know, an hour or two when I was playing. I could just bury my head in this game and just play it for an hour or two and just have a lot of fun. And they've turned that into you can't play that long in one setting unless you do everything perfectly. So that's one thing. But the other thing is that even if you're playing for 30 minutes, it's a 30-minute experience that is interrupted by constant advertising.
Oh, that would drive me nuts.
It is unclean. It's disgusting. And that brings us to our actual topic.
That, Brian, I believe qualifies as the longest intro to a topic we have ever had. Because I'm pretty sure that was about 10 minutes.
That's saying something. Amazon is offering you a discount of $50 or $75 for one of two Android phone models. If you are willing to watch, or in exchange for you having to watch Amazon commercials on your lock screen.
Oh, holy crap. Seriously?
Seriously. Now you already get Amazon ads on like the Fire devices, the whatchamacallit.
The Kindles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you already get that, which is, again, screw that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it. I don't need it. I let me pay for my, it's one of the things I love about Apple. Let me pay for my stuff. Don't make me the product. Let me pay for my stuff.
Right. Okay. So just to make sure I'm not misinterpreting this, if you allow ads to play on the lock screen of your Android phone, then you can get discounts on other Android phones.
Well, it's more like, yeah, more the my mostly pedantic side is going to come out here. Amazon is giving you a discount on two phones that play ads on the lock screen. Play Amazon ads.
Oh,
on the
lock screen. All right.
There's two specific models. It's the Moto G and the Blue R1.
That's just sexy.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Do they know how to do names or what?
Yeah, no joke. I'm like.
All right, so
where is this story?
So $50 or $75 off on a phone. And in exchange, they're going to force ads onto your lock screen.
Yeah, that's what you're getting for your $50. You're getting commercials for your $50. So it's the Blue, and that's BLU, Blue R1 HD. Bleep, bloop, bleep.
Bloop, 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 bloop. This doesn't sound like that good of a deal to me.
Well, I would call it a terrible deal. But, I mean, you know, money is relative to everybody. And maybe there may well be people out there who would gratefully endure ads on their lock screen to have a better device for less money. That's entirely possible.
You know, I think I'd rather stick with my my homemade TARDIS graphic on my home screen.
I think I would rather not have to watch commercials on my lock screen.
Same here. Now, are any of these commercials video, or are they all just like still images?
I don't even know, to be honest. I mean, probably stills. I mean, it's a video. That would really, really kill battery life.
So battery schmattery. They could show you ads for portable chargers.
That's true. They could. I don't know. I haven't done that much research into this. My assumption is it's going to be stills that Amazon gets to change out. I don't like it. I don't like it. Stop making us the product. Let us pay for stuff. You know, if Apple didn't let us pay for stuff, there would be no place where we could just go pay for stuff in the tech world.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what it seems like.
It seems like most tech companies have decided the real value is not in the product, it's in the user, meaning turn us into the product.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Cheerled by Google. You know, and everybody else is sort of recognized the genius of Google and followed their steps. And I just, you know, I hate it. I don't like it. Listen. I watch ads on TV because the ads pay for the TV. I would actually rather watch my TV commercial free. Mm-hmm. But it turns out someone's got to pay for it.
Right.
And I will merrily watch something on Netflix. But if I'm watching something that's being broadcast, if I've TiVo'd it, I watch the commercials, or at least I let them play. I don't necessarily pay attention to them by any stretch of the imagination. And ads pay for our living.
Yes, that's true.
Right? The Mac Observer exists because advertisers sponsor us.
Right.
But there's a difference between sponsoring content and making the user the product. There's such a world of difference to that. And I love our sponsors. And we have been blessed by having our podcast sponsors, for instance, have all been amazing companies with
yes.
great products. And the vast majority, and I actually can't think of anyone, but there may have been a company that slipped through at some point. But the advertisers that sponsor TMO again are good companies, and they're sponsoring our content, and they make it possible for us to bring you this content so that you can read it and you can listen to it, and
so we can eat,
and so we'll see how we do the job so that we can eat. That's right.
Right.
And there's a role for advertising to play, but this ever increasing thing about putting ads everywhere we go, inserting ads into everything and not letting us buy it. I mean, like I could
inserting ads into everything and not letting us buy it.
Oh, that's so staying in.
Oh, that was perfect. Oh my God. Did that actually come through?
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Oh, that's so funny. Yet. Neither do I, Siri. Neither do I.
I would prefer not to say.
All right. Whatever. So, there are so many ways. There's so many ways that Rovio could have made Angry Birds a free to download game where you unlock content for money.
Yeah, and okay, you want to see an example of this done really well?
Yes.
Lego. The Lego games on iOS are done, I mean, it's really well how they're done. You can play games from beginning to end and never have to buy anything. But you can, if you choose, take advantage of in-app purchases. So you get, say, like additional levels or maybe other characters that you can play that aren't necessary to win, but can enhance the game for you in some way. So Lego totally gets it.
So does Kingdom Rush. Kingdom Rush does the same thing. Well, you actually pay for the game. So it's not a free download.
Okay.
But in addition to that, you can buy things that make it easier to get through the game, but are not required. And you can buy heroes that make it that do more than the free heroes. But again, you don't have to have them to succeed at the game.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm cool. I'm not just cool with that sort of thing. I'm totally down with it.
Yep.
But like, you know, going back to Angry Birds, Angry Birds has been designed to require watching ads a lot to get through most levels.
So it sounds to me like Angry Birds has become an advertising platform with just enough gameplay stitching things together to keep you from leaving.
You know, it's more than that. See, that's the thing about it. It is otherwise such a great game. There's so much about Angry Birds 2 that is just amazing. That's just like, you know, genius. I mean, you know, Rovio has clearly good people working for them. And they've made some really, really good games. By the way, one of my favorites is when I get an ad, an ad on Angry Birds 2. For Angry Birds 2. That part may be a little bit less clever on someone's part. But I mean, like, it's not your characterization is actually, I think, not quite doing Rovio in the game. They're giving them their proper due. It is more than just enough game content to keep you going. It's a lot of really good game content, even if I'm frustrated by the shift, you know, the shift in to multiple levels per multiple screens per level. Even if I'm frustrated by that, the rest of the game is dynamite. The playing against other players, even with the manipulation that they do, that's still fun. It's still fun to actually challenge other players.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I wish it was live, but whatever. It's cool. It's a good game. It's just they've gone to this dark side. They've crossed over and turned too much of the game into a manipulation engine. And you know, when you're designing levels to require at least an ad to be able to get through the level, by getting that one extra bird.
Yeah.
That to me is crossing over to the dark side.
Yeah, you know, I haven't played Angry Birds 2, and based on your representation of the game, I have no interest in playing. If I start getting lots of ads popping up in a game, you know how hardcore I am about games. Mm-hmm. That's more than enough to just shut me off, and I'm done.
Well, I much prefer. I tend to not play games that play a lot of ads. What I like is games, because again, ads do pay for a lot of content that many of us take for granted. But what I would like, and some games do this, is for them to sell me an ad free option.
Yes. Okay. This is what I like about Bejeweled. I've been a Bejeweled player ever since I had it on my Palm Pilot, so a long time ago, and I still play it on my iPhone, and I paid like $3, I think is what it cost to get the ads taken out, and I love it because I get to play the game I want. I was able to support the developer, and yep, I don't have to see ads.
Yeah, well, that's well worth it. You know, and the funny thing is, this is really all Apple's fault. Apple should have made the minimum price 99 cents instead of free. I know I'm opening a can of worms here when we only have a couple minutes left in the show.
But I get what you're saying, and I like the idea of increasing the perceived value of content on the App Store. I think the race to the bottom has been a horrible disservice to developers
and to users.
I mean, people look at an app and are appalled to have to pay 99 cents for something, or $4 for $5, whatever, for something, and yet they will spend that much every day at Starbucks.
Yeah, there's a huge disconnect. I get. I have no empathy for people who complain about having to spend $5 or $10 even on an app. I had no empathy whatsoever.
What's the most expensive app on your iPhone or iPad?
Assuredly, the something from the Omni Group.
It's kind of funny. Same thing for me.
Yep.
Yeah. So yes, I have $50 apps on my iPad.
Yeah, because you know they're proud of their work and they actually charge you for it.
Well, and rightly so. I mean, these are they're making really, really good tools that I need for everything that I do.
Yeah, and it turns out it takes people to make them.
Yeah. Yeah, totally does. All right, so I just realized you did an amazing job of manipulating a story about Adobe or Amazon.
To get my rant in about Angry Birds?
Yeah.
You're welcome.
But you know, if you feel better now, Brian, it's all worth it.
No, I don't feel better. I'm such a completionist, man. I'm such a completionist. I want to finish the game, and it's hard for me to walk away from Angry Birds Arena, even though I'm just like increasingly unhappy about it. I have problems.
Yeah. What you need to do, Brian, is work on your gaming zen, or learn to be like me and be very fickle about your games.
Hey, you know, I made great strides in finding a way to be less bitchy, cantankerous, and whiny, and frothy mouthed, and angry about reading bad books.
That's true. You did.
So you know, one minor breakthrough at a time, please.
Okay, fair enough. Baby steps.
Yeah. We'll have a link to a blog post I made about.
And it's totally worth reading.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Dude, I just said it's totally worth reading. So there you go.
All right. Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. All righty. Boy, you know, at least this rant sort of woke me up.
Yeah, well, that's good. And you do sound like you have a lot more energy in you.
Yeah.
Which means it's probably time to wrap up because now you're awake.
It's true. Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yep. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.